Tomasic is the very first and still the most wonderful field coordinator of the Raising Women's Voices Project. Marianne did an internship with Raising Women's Voices while she was in grad school, went back and finished that MPH, and then we lured her back to us. And she's based in New York City and manages this incredible network of regional coordinators that have been so powerful and effective. So she's going to talk about how we're able to make a difference in the exchanges.
Thanks, Cindy. Hello, everyone. I'm Marianne. I'm speaking in place of Lois Utley, who's currently speaking at another presentation that was scheduled at the same time. So thanks, Cindy, for giving us kind of an overview. Just to review some of the facts so we can put this law into context, the Affordable Care Act was signed about 3 years ago. Since then, it's been upheld by the Supreme Court. It's been upheld in the public eye through a national election. And there's a lot of benefits and protections that have already been in place. So it's not just a current issue. This law has been in effect for 3 years, and so we've seen changes over the 3 years, including key women's preventive care that is now covered by all new insurance plans without copay. So this includes services such as contraception, such as cervical cancer screenings, et cetera. So to take a big picture, let's look at the women who are of reproductive age, so ages 15 to 44, and where they get their insurance from. As you can see, a little over 13 million are still uninsured, and we broke it down by income because that's how the Affordable Care Act is going to help benefit them. As Cindy said in the previous presentation, those who are under 138% could may be eligible for Medicaid expansion if their state chooses to do so, and those above 138 may be eligible for subsidies so that they can buy insurance plans on the marketplace. So the health insurance marketplace. This is a visual in case that, you know, it's hard to for you to figure out what the health insurance marketplace is. Basically, any uninsured individual or family will be able to come to the health insurance marketplace. It's like a virtual Costco where a whole bunch of people are going to be able to come to buy a product, and therefore the cost of the product will come down. Once you come to the marketplace, they'll screen you for your income and your household size. So if you are eligible for a public program like Medicaid or free or low-cost health insurance, you won't have to go through the process of looking at private health insurance plans. You can just go directly and enroll into the program you're eligible for. And when you get to the marketplace, you'll meet a navigator who can help you figure out what's going to be the best plan for you. These are people in your community who are going to ask you the key questions, like, do you have a doctor that you like, that you want covered in your plan, or do you have certain prescriptions that you need your plan to cover? And they know all about the marketplace, so they can help you figure out where you need to go, what you need to look for, and what information you need to be knowledgeable about. In the marketplace, as I said, we'll have access to public insurance, so if you're eligible for Medicaid, you can go there and get enrolled into the program. But if you're not eligible for Medicaid and you still need health insurance, you can look at private health care plans. All the plans in the marketplace are certified, so they're going to have the coverage the minimum coverage needed for it to be a good plan. If you fall in certain income eligibility brackets, you may be eligible for subsidies. So basically financial assistance on a sliding scale so that you can buy a healthcare plan that fits your needs. This is a map of the U.S. in where states are where they come down on health insurance marketplaces. So all the ones that are in like this tealish color are states that have gone forth and set up their own marketplace. All the states that are in purple, so you can see the Bible Belt, and then in the South, are all states that refuse to set up their own health marketplace. So all the uninsured people in those purple states have to go to the federally facilitated marketplace, healthcare.gov. It's been in the news that they have had some trouble, and obviously you can see why, because you have a lot of states who refuse to set up their own marketplace. So you have millions of uninsured people going to a website that wasn't the intention. But this is just goes to show you how across the U.S. we have a very challenging political environment to get this healthcare law implemented. In the back, you should have received a yellow handout. And it has 10 key policies and procedures that we've been promoting. I'm going to talk about 7 of them in this presentation. If you have questions or want to talk with me more, feel free to grab me aside and after the session is over, or you can find me in booth 317. So the first one I'm going to talk about is engaging women's and LGBT health stakeholders. It's very important that as these policies are being made and as the marketplace is being developed, that there are women and LGBT advocates at the table, because we want this to work from the get-go, and we don't want to be, just looking at problems afterwards. Of the 28 regional coordinators that we currently have, 21 of them are active in their state coalitions, and 6 of them are actually in leadership positions. This helps make sure that reproductive health and LGBT health are really put at the forefront of these coalitions. An example is in New York. I'm part of Raising Women's Voices New York as well. We're in the steering committee of our statewide health coalition called Healthcare for All New York, and we also coordinate the LGBT task force in that coalition. That's actually put us in a very great spot in New York, in that when training modules came out for the navigators who are going to help people find healthcare plans in New York's marketplace, they gave us a sneak peek of the training modules and asked us, are there any recommendations that you have that can make this module more LGBT friendly? And so we were able to give recommendations like, maybe you should include a same-sex married couple and explain how they would go through the marketplace. And they were able to make those changes as well. The second one is Medicaid expansion. On the map to the right shows where states are in terms of accepting. As you can see, it kind of matches the map I showed earlier, because a lot of the states that refuse to set up a marketplace are also refusing to accept federal funding to support the cost of expanding their Medicaid eligibility. And if you look again at the income distribution, you can see that if every single state in the U.S. decided to expand Medicaid, that we could easily cut the uninsurance rate of women of reproductive age in half, because all those women in less than 138% of the federal poverty level would then be eligible for Medicaid. Obviously, there are obstacles when it comes to getting people enrolled and making sure the information gets out there, but the Medicaid expansion on itself is a great way to significantly cut the uninsured rate. The next model policy is non-discrimination policies. So the ACA prohibits discrimination on certain demographic factors, including sex, gender identity, and sexual orientation. This was a huge win for the LGBT population, because it said it in code, in regulation, that this absolutely cannot occur. That's great, but we wanted states to state that explicitly to insurance companies. So in 3 of our states, Washington, California, and New York, when the state went out to the insurance companies to ask them to, submit plans that could be sold in their health insurance marketplaces, they clearly said on the application, you cannot discriminate based on these factors, and they included sexual orientation and gender identity. That was a great step forward, because it puts it out there, and it reminds insurers that they can't even have benefit plans, the benefit coverage, discriminate against people who are minorities, gender identity, and are LGBT. The next is outreach and enrollment. The outreach should be culturally and linguistically competent. For example, going back to Raising Women's Voices New York, we were able to get a sneak peek of some of the outreach materials. And when we looked at the LGBT outreach materials, one of our recommendations was, if you want to do outreach in the LGBT community, perhaps you should include a picture of a same-sex couple, not a heterosexual couple, on your LGBT flyer. so we went back to the drawing table with them, and they got pictures, and they made it relevant to the LGBT community. In addition, when people go to enroll, we want to make sure that they are able to find healthcare plans that will fit their needs. So that's not just the cost of buying health insurance, that's the cost of using your health insurance too. So one of the things we want to make sure is that when women were going to enroll for healthcare plans, that they would be able to search their plans by their OBGYN or by any health clinic that they are accustomed to using or that they like and want to continue going to. In addition, if you have specific medication and procedures, you should be able to filter out plans that don't cover your medication, because if you're going to use it, you're going to want that coverage. So when we looked at the website, one of the questions that popped up automatically is, are you pregnant? So you're just looking on the marketplace, and you know, you haven't even typed in your income. Some of the questions you're going to see are you pregnant? And it may not just be you. It could be addressing a partner or your dependent. Now, that's an important question, because in some states, if you're pregnant, you have expanded Medicaid eligibility. So you may be eligible for free health insurance through your state. However, it's a very invasive question. So here's three examples from three different states on how they approach this question on their enrollment website. On the upper left-hand corner, you see, is anyone pregnant? There's no help text. It's just, you know, you see a family and you check yes or no. That's from Illinois. Without help text, it's hard to understand why you need that that information. For some people, they may think, oh, maybe if I put yes that I'm pregnant, I may not be eligible for any coverage, so maybe I should just, you know, press no and just continue on. And they don't know, they don't understand that actually if they answer yes and they intend to continue the pregnancy, they'll be able to get a lot cheaper healthcare coverage. The one on the right has help text, but has problematic health text. Select yes for any female who is expecting a baby. Unborn children are counted as members of your household. So this information helps you determine if you're eligible for help with healthcare costs. That's from Connecticut. So that's a very, you know, that comes from a very progressive state. And we talked with advocates there. They don't believe that it was, they don't have any reason to believe that it was intentionally made to be such a problematic language, but more of a result of not enough women being involved in the process of setting up the enrollment system. So that goes back to kind of like the first model policy of women have to be at the table, otherwise things like this will pass on by and then get to the general public. In New York, which is the lower example, we were given a demonstration of the enrollment website. And when we saw this, I'm Maria, so I went to go enroll, and they asked me if I'm pregnant. When we got to this, we talked to our state of health, and we're like, you need to have very clear help text here that explains that you're going to get extra help if you are pregnant, but it doesn't make you feel like you won't be eligible for something or that you'll be discriminated against because you're pregnant. So it's kind of a vague help text, and navigators know to explain a little bit more about why you're asking. But this is just an example of one of the questions that women advocates have to like keep an eye out for in their state. Another model practice that we need to do is making sure that the plans cover what women need. So this means robust coverage that goes beyond just our reproductive health care, obviously, and beyond prenatal and maternity care. We need to make sure that contraception is covered, including sterilizations. So as I said in the first slide, there's a lot of new coverage of women's preventive services. However, in New York, when we were looking through some of the explanation of benefits for some of the plans sold in our marketplace, we found that a Catholic-owned health insurance company listed that sterilizations were not covered in their health insurance plan and said nothing else. Well, all new insurance plans have to cover contraception and have to cover sterilization, whether it's the insurance company that's directly funding that or through a third party, you know, that could be changed. But women need to know that even if you buy a Catholic health insurance plan through the marketplace, that you still can get sterilization without copay. So we went back to the insurance company, they switched around the language, and they no longer have that as an exclusion on their benefits. Additionally, confidentiality has been coming up in a lot of the progressive states, especially, so that when dependents access special services, so any if they need to go to OBGYN, if they need to get an abortion, if they're using mental health services, making sure that they have an opportunity to request that service be kept confidential from other people in the plan. And this is especially important for people who are in abusive relationships and may not want to know their partner to know that they've been accessing certain healthcare services. Of course, the coverage of abortion. So what's the ACA rule when it comes to abortion? Well, if your state does not say anything about abortion, does not restrict it, then insurance companies can sell coverage that includes abortion. At least New York and at least 10 other progressive states have select model plans that serve as a minimum floor of benefits for all the plans sold in their state. Now, in these states, they've actually picked a benchmark plan that includes abortion coverage. And while that won't force all of the insurance plans in those states to provide that coverage, it does say something that more than 10 states have acknowledged that those are model policies and that abortion coverage is included in that model plan. The ACA included the Nelson Amendment, which requires that if any insurance company is going to offer a plan that includes abortion coverage, that the money used to pay for that abortion coverage is kept separate from the money that's used to pay for everything else. It's really an accounting mechanism that we want to make sure is not burdensome to women who want to access that care. So in the states, we're advocating for a policy that when insurance companies are offering abortion coverage, that they make it as least burdensome to women as possible, so that when they get their when they have to pay their premiums, they pay it once, and they don't see an itemization. So they are not going to see premium for abortion coverage and then premium for all non-abortion coverage. That they just see a premium and they don't have to worry about the accounting behind it that, you know, was forced to be in the ACA. The next model policy is adequacy of health plan provider networks. So, you know, you have health insurance, that's great, but do you have enough providers in that network that make that health plan usable? So we're going to have all of our regional coordinators and advocates in the area kind of sit down and look at the networks and figure out, are there areas in the state where there's not an OBGYN that's in the area, or are they not including enough providers so that women can get the care they need in a timely fashion? Including with that, we're also going to be looking at some of the benefits that are included in the plans to make sure that that LGBT health is adequately included in some of the coverage that's being sold, and same thing with women's reproductive health. Finally, we're going to be talking, we've been looking at health quality measures that can measure how well a plan cares for women and LGBT health. One great example comes from Oregon called One Key Question. Now, Oregon's Medicaid program is using this model called coordinated care organizations. And basically, a bunch of different providers, hospitals, and offices will group together to form one CCO. And each of these little groups are going to be held accountable to certain quality measures. And in Oregon, they have gotten reproductive health as a core quality measure for these organizations. And that means that each of these organizations are going to have to report whether the women of reproductive age in their plans were asked one key question. In the next year, do you plan on becoming pregnant? If yes, great, let's talk about prenatal health. If not, what kind of contraception are you using and is it effective? So they're going to be measuring that and seeing the number of women who do not want to become pregnant and whether they're using effective contraception. And they're in their first year of that. But the idea that it's been institutionalized and it's a reporting quality health measure is just the first step, and we hope to have that implemented in other states as well. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about enrolling women. So in New York, we also serve as a regional coordinator. So that means that we're also doing on-the-ground work in New York City specifically, because that's where our organization is based. And we've been doing a lot of outreach into the community. We've been doing, like, Harlem Day. We've been at Pride Fest all throughout the summer. We go to parades, Columbus Day Parade. And we've also have partnered with faith-based organizations. As just an example, 2 weekends ago, I was with the New York City Presbytery, and we were key speakers for their Congregational Resource Day. So we had about 40 representatives from different churches come to learn about healthcare reform and brainstorm ways that they can engage their own congregations and their own ministry teams to reach out into the community and make sure that this information gets out to the people who need it. We've referred them all to local navigators, so it's not just you hear a message and that's it. It's you hear a message, here's a phone number you can call, make an appointment with the navigator so they can continue the process. A lot of the people that we meet give us their phone number so we can call them back and follow up and remind them that, you know, these navigators are there for them to help them get insurance. As you guys have those flyers that show some of the tools that we have to help people on the ground talk with other women and other families in the community about the marketplace. And if you are internet savvy, you can go to our website, which was just recently relaunched, And under the Get Cover tab, we actually have tools about, you know, why do I need health insurance? How do I choose a plan? Where do I go to enroll? And they just give you some resources to help you figure out what information you need. Feel free to pull this off our website and use it in whatever organizations you come from. Or if you want to find out what your state is doing, you can go to how to enroll, and we have all the states listed, and you can click, and it will bring you to, if your state has a marketplace, it will bring it to that marketplace. Or if your state chose not to have its own, it will bring you to the federal page. And yeah, and then we have these cool little graphics. I'm going to make a plug. If you are on social media, you should connect with us. We have great, great little Facebook badges. We put it out on Twitter. If you tweet us, I will respond. I am the Twitter, I'm our Twitter person. So if you ever want to get in touch with me, you can always, you know, direct message us, and I'll be on the receiving end. But yes, please connect with us, and you can get more resources even after the conference. Thanks.